Thank you very much, Cheryl. I'm curious where you found the message about the wind, the one that I shared last week and you shared today, because I couldn't find it online, but it appears that you did. I only had the typed up printout that I have, but it appears you found it online. So, yeah, you want to take the mic and tell me? Okay.
I shared the whole story with them, but I was listening to the audio the other day of you talking about it, and I came home and typed it up because it was speaking to me so succinctly that I came home and typed it up. So that's how I found it, on the audio from last week that Regina did, which was, I don't know, what was the date last week? The 5th? February 5th. But anyway, that's where I found it, there, and then I typed it up.
Okay, good. Then I'm not crazy. I thought, wow, she found it and I didn't. Okay, perfect. Well, I'm really excited because, as you know, Cheryl, tonight I'm going to start sharing the 7 steps to awakening during this time frame. I've already been sharing it on Mondays this year. So in the 7 steps to awakening tonight, I will be starting quote number 45. But I realize that some of the people that listen regularly on Sunday night may not know what the 7 steps to awakening is. So I'm just going to give you a hair of information. But I will tell you that I did my first hour of teaching from the 7 steps to awakening. I went over the instructions, which are actually worth reading or listening to. So if you're really more interested in what the 7 steps to awakening is and you want to hear that very first hour, you can go to reginadonacres.com, and on the menu on the right you will find a menu choice for 7 steps to awakening, and you just click on that, and then the very bottom recording on the page is the very first one. And that's the one where I went over the introduction, and I think I also went over the first 3 quotes, the 7 steps to awakening. So if you really want to hear what this is about, you might go back and listen to that teaching. I have Cheryl Valentine to thank for the 7 steps to awakening. She came and visited me, I think it was the last week of October, and said that she had been feeling to buy this book for me. And she wanted to know if she bought it for me, you know, would I be interested in it? And I knew immediately which book she was talking about, because it seems like every time I go onto Amazon.com and I'm looking at anything, this book shows up. And in fact, that's been going on for a couple of years. And although it keeps showing up and keeps attracting my attention, like it keeps popping out at me, I didn't buy it because I just thought the name of it was too corny, the 7 Steps to Awakening, you know. And one of the people that is quoted in the book is Ramana Maharshi, and I was already doing work with him, and I don't know, I just never did buy it. But when Cheryl showed up and said she had been feeling, I think I told her something like, well, Holy Spirit must want me to read it then, and since I'm not doing it, since I'm not buying it on my own, he's having to send it to me through you. So yeah, go ahead, send it to me and I'll read it. And as soon as I opened the book, this is not at all an exaggeration, as soon as I opened it and began reading the instructions, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that this was actually going to be my next primary practice. I started working with it around the end of November. And it went with me to India. And then on the way back from India, I think many of you know, I received the guidance on the airplane to lead a year of silence this year. And I knew the 7 Steps to Awakening was going to have a core part of that year of silence. So thank you, Cheryl. What's really funny also is after I announced about the year of silence, and I announced that I was going to be working with the 7 Steps to Awakening, I got emails from several people, and the most recent email just came last week, other people who had told me that they also, in the last 6 months or so, felt guidance to buy this book. Some of them had started looking at it immediately and were already working with it somewhat. Some of them, you know, kept picking it up and putting it down. Some of them just bought it and it just sat there in their house. But it was already in many people's houses, which is really quite interesting. And when I announced that I was going to be using it, that was just the wind under the wings, if you will, that got some of these people who were also feeling the same guidance, got them more involved in their own guidance. So it's kind of funny how Holy Spirit works, you know. So many of us are using this book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Briefly, the way that you're supposed to use the book is that it's filled with nothing but quotes. Once you get past the instructions, there is nothing but quotes. And what you are supposed to do is read each quote a minimum of 3 times. Of course, if you feel guided to read it more, you can, but you're not supposed to read the quote less than 3 times. And then after reading the quote, you are to write from within yourself, in your own words, what that quote means and how you can practice it. And when I first said that, I think a few people, I think Cheryl was one of them, I think, maybe I'm wrong about that. Was it you, Cheryl? Are you the one that said that sounds like it would come a lot from the thinking mind? And Donna typed in, yeah, I was thinking that too. And I said, no, that's not true. Yeah, you did say that. Okay. I said, no, that's not true. I said, what happens as you read the quotes and as you just sit kind of in a stillness contemplation with them, not a thinking, but just a being with the quotes, at least in my experience, something begins to rise up in you about what that means for you. I was reading yesterday in A Course in Miracles, I forget what workbook lesson we're on, probably around 42. You know, Jesus has just started around lesson 41, 42, 43, to really tell the students of A Course in Miracles, in addition to whatever other practice he lays out, he asked them to allow related thoughts to the practice for the day, to allow related thoughts to come into their mind. He tells them not to strive too hard to find related thoughts, just relax. If nothing is coming to the mind, just repeat the thought for today as it is written. But when related thoughts do begin to come, to allow them to come. It's really very similar to this. You just sit back and you read the quote in a relaxing way. Nothing begins to come and you read the quote again. Again, always reading the quote at least 3 times, but if still nothing is coming, you just relax with the quote and read it again. And usually I know it's my last quote for the day when, even though I've read it a few times, just nothing is coming. And I know, well, that's it, I'm done for today. Tomorrow something will come. And sure enough, tomorrow something does come when I start on the same quote again. But again, you don't strive to come up with something. You know, you don't work hard. You're not using your thinking mind. It's a very relaxing, contemplative way of being with the quotes. And then something is given to you, which I would say is very personal guidance, a very personal understanding of the quote, how it can be most helpful to you at this time. I am currently in step 2. I finished all of step 1, and I'm in step 2 in my daily practice. But with the teaching, we are still in step 1. There's 213 quotes, I think, in step 1, and today I'll be beginning with quote number 45. I am keeping my journal online, so anybody who wants to can read my journal as well. I read it every day. In addition to writing these quotes, I go back and read my journal multiple times. I read my journal every day. So it's online, and I'll be sharing it with you tonight. You can also follow my online journal if you want to. Some people who are doing the 7 steps feel clearly guided not to read my journal or listen to my teachings. And if that is the guidance, that is certainly what I recommend. I'm not at all offended. I want everybody to get what is pure, what their guidance is within themselves. And if there's some feeling that maybe you would just copy Regina, but then I definitely recommend that you do the quotes on your own and not listen to me or read mine. Other people find that actually the way the quotes are rewritten after they come through me are more meaningful for them than the original version, because some of the language is a little complicated. So if you find that the way I write the quotes is very helpful to you, maybe you'll want to read the quotes in the book, read what I've written, and then let something come through you. If copying is not a problem, but somehow it helps with the clarity. So, you know, each one just has to know what's best for themselves. All right, Jamie wants in, so I'm going to let her in, and then we will do a moment of silence, and then we'll get started. Okay. Whoops, the phone is ringing. Let me just turn that off. All right. So why don't we go into a moment of silence, and then we'll get started with quote number 45. Amen. All right. So what I'm going to do is give you a link. The link is to my journal. So this is what I wrote after contemplation of quote number 45. I'm actually going to read from the book first. I will always read the original quote from the book, and then we'll look at what came through me as I contemplated that quote. If you happen to have the Seven Steps to Awakening and you want to read along in the book, I'm starting at the top of page 24 with quote number 45. And this is the very last Ramana Maharshi quote for step one. Then we move into Sri Muru Ganar, which we've kind of been with Sri Muru Ganar anyway, because all of the Ramana Maharshi quotes that are in this book are from the Garland of Guru Sains. That garland was written by Sri Muru Ganar. So he was a devotee of Ramana's. He listened to Ramana. Then he wrote in poetic form Ramana's teachings. And then Ramana read the garland and approved it. So the exact words, even though Ramana is given the credit, the exact words that we've been looking at so far have actually been Muru Ganar's anyway. But it was his poetic expression of Ramana's teachings. So the last Ramana quote then, number 45. Until this primal doubt is cleared. And he is referring, by the way, the doubt of who am I, the doubt of not knowing ourself. That's the doubt he's referring to. That's the primal doubt. He says, until this primal doubt is cleared, replying to your other doubts will be just like cutting the leaves off the branches of a tree. Because they will sprout again and again. But if the root is cut, they will not sprout again. Now, many years before I ever heard of Ramana Maharshi, in fact, it was my first year as a course student, if I remember correctly. It seems like I was still working at private healthcare systems in Waltham, Massachusetts, and I was in my office with the door closed, doing whatever my workbook lesson was for the day. And this same clarity, the same image that's being shared in this quote came to me. Then it was around the practice of forgiveness. At this time, I was still trying to forgive, because again, I was very new to the Course. I was still trying to forgive maybe what somebody did to me or what somebody said to me. I was trying to forgive very specific little things that upset me. And the clarity came that all of these things were actually like the leaves on a tree. You know, if someone said something that offended me and I was able to forgive that instance, that actually just, that's like taking the leaf off of a tree, but then another leaf is just going to grow back in its place. And I came to see also that if I could understand why I was offended, what in my mind caused me to be offended, you know, that I would get down to core beliefs that cause me pain, beliefs such as beliefs in unworthiness, beliefs in betrayal, beliefs in rejectability, etc. And I saw that each time I could get down to a core belief in my mind and then forgive that belief, or said another way, allow that belief to be healed, that was like cutting an entire branch off the tree. And when you cut an entire branch off the tree, none of those leaves can grow back. Of course, there are still other branches, so there's still other things that can offend and upset. But you, if you've cut off the betrayal branch, for example, you can never be betrayed again because that belief has been healed in your mind. But I also saw that the belief in separation, the belief that I am an individual person, was the cause of everything. And that if I could let go of that, that was like cutting the tree at its trunk. And then there would be no branches, no leaves, right? There's nothing. Everything is healed when you heal that one idea. And that is the primal doubt that he's talking about here, the primal doubt about who I am, or we could call it the belief that I am in this little person instead of the divine self, for example, using that language. So he says, until this primal doubt is cleared, replying to your other doubts will be just like cutting the leaves off the branches of a tree, because they will sprout again and again. But if the root is cut, they will not sprout again. All right, so now I'm going to my journal. Number 45, this is what I wrote after silent contemplation with this quote. What do I doubt? Do I doubt my brother's intentions? Do I doubt anything else? All world-based doubts are a projection of the one fundamental doubt, the I do not know myself thought. Let all doubt be seen as the projection of this one doubt. Realize that without this one imaginary doubt, no other doubt could arise. And of course, as I was writing this, the clarity that was coming was that if I fully knew my true self, my divine self, which is inclusive of everything, it's that oneness self, then I could not, for example, doubt a brother's intentions. A belief in separation is required for me to doubt a brother's intentions. So I realized that all doubts, no matter what they appear to be, are just projections of this one primary doubt. And again, to try and forgive my doubting of a brother's intentions is like trying to forgive the leaf on a tree. And instead, what I really want to do is focus on that primal doubt, or focus on that belief in separation, that belief that I am a personal I, that non-realizing of my true self. Continue to only work on that, only work on the root, or only work on the trunk of the tree. Because once that one doubt is taken care of, once that one false belief is taken care of, everything else is healed simultaneously. So really, why waste our time anywhere else? Why not just go immediately for that? So that was my understanding of the teaching. So again, what do I doubt? Do I doubt my brother's intentions? Do I doubt anything else? All world-based doubts are a projection of the one fundamental doubt, the I do not know myself thought. Let all doubt be seen as the projection of this one doubt. Realize that without this one imaginary doubt, no other doubt could arise. You chop the tree down at the trunk, and there are no leaves, there are no branches. Everything is healed simultaneously. Again, the Course says, one problem, one solution. All right, for those of you who are currently in the journal with me, the way that we're going to advance to number 46, if you scroll down, you'll see there's a place there where people can comment on the journal if they want to. But if you scroll down below the comments area and above the darker gray area and scroll over to the left, you'll see where there's a little number 46. And you can click on that number 46, and that will take you to the next journal entry. For anyone who is new to the room and has not already entered the journal, here's a link for you directly to number 46. Before I read what I wrote on number 46, I am going to read the quote. Again, now we're listening to the words of Sri Muru Ganar, whom I also love dearly. If you saw my pictures from my trip to India, you saw I took about 4 or 5 pictures of his shrine, which probably is a symbol of how much I love Muru Ganar. Very, very much I love Muru Ganar. So, quote number 46 from Sri Muru Ganar. As the gracious light of inner realization entered my heart, all knowledge acquired through learning was exposed as merely a creation of the mind, and as it fell away, my consciousness, free of attributes, shining in its natural state of attachment to the self, that shines without attachment to anything, gained its final victory as the consciousness that is absolute and all-embracing. Now, Muru Ganar as a man is one that we would have called a very smart man, a scholar, in the words of the Indian tradition, a poet, a brilliant man. And of course, what he is saying here is that as the realization of self awoke in him, he realized that all of the other knowledge that he probably identified with before, all of that was meaningless in the light of truth. So why don't we look at what I wrote in the journal after contemplating Muru Ganar's quote. True seeing is acquired through grace. True seeing transcends all thought that was thought to be knowing. Surrender what has been learned and the desire to learn. Constantly be open to grace. Unceasingly invite grace to enter. And maybe this is a part of why I love Muru Ganar so much. I can't give you a conscious reason for what I'm about to say, but when I look in his eyes, and there's only one photograph of him that I know of. It's the same one that was on his shrine that's on the cover of the Garland of Gurus sayings. But when I look in his eyes, what I see is a face that basically says, I was struck by grace. And everything changed. That's what I see in him. That's what he's a symbol of for me. And that is what I received in this quote, that, you know, he had learned so much through formal training and through practice. But when grace struck, it transcended everything that he had thought to be valuable before. And I know that many of us think that learning is valuable. Many of us have been on the path of learning, the spiritual path for us has been the path of learning. We have studied very good books like A Course in Miracles, but we have studied as if we were going to learn awakening. And what this quote says to me is that is not true. We do not learn awakening. Awakening comes through grace. And in fact, when grace comes, everything that we learned that we thought was valuable up until that point is seen as meaningless. Everything. It just falls away. And the only thing that has any meaning at all is that self that we have realized. So again, number 46 in my journal. True seeing is acquired through grace. True seeing transcends all thought that was thought to be knowing. Surrender what has been learned and the desire to learn. Constantly be open to grace. Unceasingly invite grace to enter. So I also hear this as an invitation to leave learning, or the idea of learning, as the idea of how we are awakened. Leave that behind. It will never be acquired through learning. You know, he says, surrender, or I say, after contemplating him, surrender what has been learned and the desire to learn. Let go of wanting to understand truth. And instead, just focus on that willingness and invite that grace to enter. All right. So scrolling down once again, below the comment area and above the darker gray area, over to the left, click on number 47. And I will also post this link to number 47 directly in the room. I'm going back to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, page 24. The second quote from Sri Muruganar, quote number 47 in the book. The self abides as the fullness of consciousness within the mind, and it alone illumines as the mind. Therefore, only the science of knowing, the grace of the self that shines as pure consciousness, is true science. All other sciences are false. And again, this is coming from someone who had been a scholar. And he is now saying that the only science is the science of grace. Any other science is not true. If we look at what I wrote for number 47, I wrote, the science of grace is this. Grace allows and illumines all appearances. That is true grace. Everything is grace, including mind, which appears to block or obstruct grace. Since grace is all-pervasive, and all experience is experienced through grace. To say that one does not know grace is as foolish as saying one does not know self. Now, in a way, this journal entry is related to an earlier journal entry. There was an earlier journal entry that I would have talked about last Monday that really looked at the idea of we do not know ourself. And it said that that isn't actually true, because the self must be present first for the doubt itself to arise, because the self is beingness, or we could call it existence or life. And if there was no beingness, then there could also not be an idea of, I do not know myself. It kind of reminds me of when I was watching a movie one time, and this movie was a ghost movie. So at the beginning of the movie, the main character died in a car crash. And I remember watching the movie. The character was kind of hanging in the air above the car crash, looking down on, I don't remember even if it was a guy or a girl, but looking down on his own body. And the character said, "I'm dead." And I remember thinking, if you can say, "I'm dead," are you dead? Right? I mean, if you were non-existent, could you even say, "I'm dead"? You must not be dead. You must have just, you know, moved to another type of experience. But if you can say, "I'm dead," then it's not possible that you're dead. Well, this was the same idea of this earlier journal entry. If you can say, "I do not know myself," that beingness already has to be present. It's the foundation of everything. Well, this thought is very similar. It is saying grace is the foundation of everything. Some people say, "I do not know grace. I can't feel grace in my heart. I never experience grace." Another word that we sometimes give grace in our community is miracles. I don't experience miracles, right? But this quote is saying that is not true, because everything comes through grace. Nothing could be without grace being present first. It reminds me of two things. One thing it reminds me of is a single quiet thought that came through me once. That single quiet thought said, "You can have God without ego, but you cannot have ego without God. It's impossible, because God, or existence, is the foundation of everything, including the belief in ego," right? So you can have God without ego, but you cannot have ego without God. Another thing this reminds me of is in the Bible, in the New Testament, it says, "Love allows all things." Love allows all things. Right? And in that case, love is just another word for grace, or grace is just another word for love. So everything we experience, regardless of whether we judge it good or bad, regardless of whether we judge it as something we want or don't want, something that should be or should not be, it actually all comes through grace, because without grace, there would be nothing. So what these two quotes are saying to me, the one from last Monday and the one from today, is that I must know myself. I'm just not paying attention. And I must know grace. I must experience grace. I'm just not noticing. You know, it's like we always hear, we're blind, but that doesn't mean it's not there. Now, if we look back for a second at Muru Ganar's quote, notice he says, "The self abides as the fullness of consciousness within the mind, and it alone illumines the mind. Therefore, only the science of knowing the grace of the self that shines as pure consciousness is true science. All other sciences are false." But he is clearly saying that the mind itself owes its apparent existence to the existence of self, because without self, there could not be mind. There could not be experience. Without God, there could not be ego. So again, I wrote at number 47, "The science of grace is this. Grace allows and illumines all appearances. That is true grace. Everything is grace, including mind, which appears to block or obstruct grace. Since grace is all-pervasive and all experience is experienced through grace, to say that one does not know grace is as foolish as saying one does not know self." Now I'm hearing that song I think I used in a previous Holy Spirit Guides teaching. That song, who was it, Bonnie Tyler that sang it? Turn around, bright eyes, right? Turn around. Every statement of suffering she states in that particular song, there's another voice in the background saying, turn around, bright eyes. And that's what these are saying to me. You say, I do not know myself. And it's just saying, turn around, bright eyes. I don't know grace. Miracles don't happen to me. Turn around, bright eyes. You know, look, just turn around and look. Because grace, love, God, self is the foundation of everything. And without that, there would be nothing. So you do experience it and you do know it. Turn around. All right, going down then to number 48, again scrolling down underneath the comments above the darker gray area, and on the left, just click on the number 48. I don't think anyone new has entered the room, so I'm not planning to post the quote directly into the room as a link. Everybody should be in the journal, but if you need it, just let me know and I will. I'm going back to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, underneath Sri Muruganar, and his quote number 48. If we apprehend the non-dual reality, it will be seen that within the self that shines in the heart as the pure knowledge that is our duty to learn and know, all other forms of knowledge have come into being through the illusory play of the mind. I will read that one more time. If we apprehend the non-dual reality, it will be seen that within the self that shines in the heart as the pure knowledge that it is our duty to learn and know, all other forms of knowledge have come into being through the illusory play of the mind. Now, I mentioned that I am in step two right now, and I am in my daily practice. But the truth is, my daily practice this morning was hitting on the same idea. These ideas come around and around and again. And this morning, it was using inquiry with me. But it was asking me to look at the mind, to notice what stories or worries or whatever was in the mind at the moment, to look at the mind, and then to notice all of the components of that, what characters are involved in these stories, what scenes, you know, what's going on, what are all the components? And then it asked me to drop in a meditative way into the still, quiet heart, and when I was surely there, away from the mind and in the stillness, just to take notice there. And could I find any separate parts at all in that still quiet heart? Could I find any separate characters, any separate scenes? Was there any separation at all in the heart? And of course, the clear answer is no. And so the point of the inquiry was that it is the mind that divides and departs. It is not what is being called the heart or the self. And this is exactly what he is saying in this quote. He is saying, if we apprehend the non-dual reality, it will be seen that within the self that shines in the heart as the pure knowledge that it is our duty to learn and know, right? It's our duty, he says, to get to know ourself. We will see from there that all other forms of knowledge have come into being through the illusory play of the mind. You can't have what we call science in that oneness, because science requires different plants to study. Medicine requires different body parts. None of that other knowledge that seems so important in the world could possibly exist within the self, because they all require separate parts. All right, so looking at my journal then, my contemplation of number 48. When we see from the first position, the self, all that comes after the first is clearly seen. The mind is seen as second, a mere invention, and all else as the result of the play of mind. Therefore, reality is only in the first position. And the first position is that which I am. Abide in the first. Observe from there. And of course, our mistake is abiding in the second position. In fact, even not only abiding there, but identifying with the mind and believing everything the mind makes and projects. But if we can go before mind, back to what is called the heart here, or what is called the self here, back to that non-dualness, if we can apprehend that, as he says in his statement, then we know that that's the reality, and that everything else is some kind of made-up play. And so our goal then is to move into that still self, that non-dual self, and stay there. When we see from the first position, the self, all that comes after the first is clearly seen. The mind is seen as second, a mere invention, and all else as a result of the play of mind. Therefore, reality is only in the first position, and the first position is that which I am. Abide in the first, observe from there. So if we were drawing a picture of this on a flip chart, I might use the sun to represent the self and show the light of the sun shining on the mind, which I might draw a brain just to represent it, because the mind is actually formless itself, but I might draw a brain. And then out of the brain comes the entire world, or out of the mind. The brain, of course, was just a symbol. Comes the entire world. We do not want to be in that third position or that second position. We want to be in that first position. All right. Once again, if you scroll down and look on the left, you can click on number 49. Someone new has entered the room, so I will also post number 49 in the room. And now I'm in the seven steps to awakening. The top of page 25, a Muru Ganar quote, number 49. Through the miracle of grace that penetrated me in the form of true, all-embracing consciousness, so that the ghostly charade created by the evil ego was abolished, I perceived that there was nothing that I needed to learn through the intellect. This is a previous scholar speaking. I perceived that there was nothing I needed to learn through the intellect. All right, so let's go to my journal. My contemplation of quote number 49. Allow grace to be the only teaching. Let go of all other ideas of learning. Learning from sources outside. Learning from experience. Learning from deduction and analysis. Let go of all learning and attempts to learn. Be keen in letting go. Be open, empty, for the teaching of grace. And I would say that that's a perfect quote to guide us through our individual practice of the seven steps to awakening. You know, we wait until our contemplation, our silent contemplation, not thinking. Contemplation has nothing to do with thinking. It's, for me, when I contemplate, the way I do it is I read the quote, and then I just sit back and I be still. And then when I feel the stillness is beginning to fade, I read the quote again, and I just sit back and I be still. But then at some point what happens is, as Jesus would word it in the Course, a related thought begins to come. And it didn't come from the power of thinking. It didn't come from deduction. It's not like I analyzed the quote and tried to understand what was meant. I was just with the quote. And my own personal related thought came as a gift. So you could say, grace is the teacher. Using the language of A Course in Miracles and using the language of NTI, we might say that Holy Spirit was the teacher. It's the same thing. It came from grace. And so this is asking us to allow grace to be the only teaching. No more trying to understand. No more going to outside sources and say, explain this to me. It doesn't matter if the first time we read the quote, it doesn't mean squat. Some of us had that same experience with A Course in Miracles. The first time we read it, it didn't mean squat. That's okay. We just rest with it and trust grace will come and teach, and we read it again. And we allow everything to come as a gift from grace. Allow grace to be the only teaching. Let go of all other ideas of learning. Learning from sources outside, learning from experience, learning from deduction and analysis. Let go of all learning and attempts to learn. Be keen in letting go. Be open, empty, for the teaching of grace. All right, so you can scroll down below the comment area, just above the darker gray area. Scroll to the left. You will see a number 50. Click on the number 50. And that will take you to my next journal entry. And first I will read number 50, the Muru Ganar quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Here is what Sri Muru Ganar said. The heart in which words and thoughts have subsided and which remains as the all-pervading reality in which there is no going, no coming, no contact with anything whatsoever, will overflow with the ambrosial clarity of the Supreme. Again, Muru Ganar. The heart in which words and thoughts have subsided and which remains as the all-pervading reality in which there is no going, no coming, no contact with anything whatsoever, will overflow with the ambrosial, I can't say that very well, ambrosial clarity of the Supreme. So again, when there are no thoughts, when there is that stillness, that's the blissful clarity, the blissful knowing. So number 50 then in the journal, after contemplation, I wrote, perfect stillness, touching nothing, going out not at all, overflows with perfect knowing, nothing to be gained. Something about this reminds me of Muji. Because as many of you know, I spent a lot of time watching Muji last year. And Muji was always telling people, no matter what thought would come into their mind, he would say, don't touch that thought. Or he would say, that is just a thought. And he was always guiding people to touch nothing, no thought. Even if the thought shows up, and this is in the teachings of Inner Ramana. Inner Ramana asks us, you know, not to even listen to the thought that says, I am still. Right? Touch no thought. Perfect stillness. Touching nothing. Going out not at all. Overflows with perfect knowing. Nothing to be gained. So that, for many of us, sets the goal. All right, if you are in the journal, you will scroll down and then over to the left, just above the dark gray, and click on number 51. If you're not in the journal and you would like to join us in the journal, I am posting a direct link to number 51 in the room, and you can click on that. But first, I will go back to the Seven Steps to Awakening and reading quote number 51 by Sri Muruganar. One moment, Jamie. She's hungry, but she'll have to wait 10 minutes. One moment, okay, love? All right. Muruganar, number 51. Oops, here comes Danielle. She's going to feed her. Jamie doesn't have to wait 10 minutes. The practice of abidance in the self is to firmly hold the mind in abeyance within the heart. It is not an act of thinking. So this is Muruganar explaining the practice that led to his grace of awakening, right? The practice he refers to, the practice here, this is pre-grace. The practice of abidance in the self is to firmly hold the mind in abeyance within the heart. It is not an act of thinking. So if we go to the journal number 51, we'll read what came to me after contemplation of this quote. Thinking about what was read is not the practice. Discussing what was read with others is also not the practice. Returning to the heart over and over again is the practice. This morning when I went to church at the Center for Inner Peace here in Pueblo, the minister asked each of us to discuss briefly, asked everyone in the church, everybody discussed it, asked each of us to share what our current spiritual challenge was. And I don't remember who said this, but someone made the comment that it was putting what they read into practice. We know from NTI, those of us who know NTI, that the Holy Spirit voice within NTI says to listen but not to practice is not to have heard. To listen but not to practice is not to have heard. So it doesn't matter how much we can quote our spiritual books. It doesn't matter how much we discuss them. How much we can talk about them, how much we think about them, how much we even read them. What matters is how much we put them into practice in our daily life. When we catch ourselves falling into an ego habit again, and without judgment, we stop and correct. We ask for current moment guidance. We let go of a thought. We return to the heart. It's the living it. Here in Pueblo, there's a group. I forget the name of the group. Kathy, you might know the name of the group. It's like the Light Workers or something like that. But they meet every other Sunday in the library, and they have different speakers. But this year, they are dedicating one of those Sundays each month to discussing how do we walk our talk. Oh, yeah, here's Kathy gave me the answer. Let me see. The Pueblo Light Connection. That's them. Yeah. So the Pueblo Light Connection. And this is people, you know, of similar faiths, you could say, but certainly not all exactly the same as A Course in Miracles. But they are noticing that, you know, a lot of wonderful talking, a lot of wonderful learning is occurring. But it's really pretty worthless without the practice of it. So now they're dedicating one Sunday, instead of having speakers all the time, they're dedicating one Sunday to discussing how can we walk our talk? How can we put it into practice? How can we live it? So again, number 51 from the journal. Thinking about what was read is not the practice. Discussing what was read with others is also not the practice. Returning to the heart over and over again is the practice. Returning to stillness, stepping away from ego, right? That is the practice. So I think we have time for at least one more. So if you are in number 51, if you will scroll down and to the left, you can click on number 52. If you're new to the room and you would like to join us as we read number 52, I am posting a link. You can call it a link if you want to. My daughter teases me because for some reason my mouth is working less and less and less. In fact, the number of words that just come out of my mouth wrong per day is increasing. And it's really funny. She just loves it. All right, so we're going to be reading number 52. But before we read what number 52 in the journal, I'm going to read the Muru Ganar quote, number 52, in The Seven Steps to Awakening. The self shines through its very nature as a beautiful radiance within the heart as all thought subsides. Realizing that the power of thought could never truly grasp it, you should abandon all such conceptualization. The self shines through its very nature as a beautiful radiance within the heart as all thought subsides. Realizing that the power of thought could never truly grasp it, you should abandon all such conceptualization. All right, so going to the journal, again, this is what I wrote after contemplation of this quote. I know the difference between what I am and what I am not. When all thinking is released and the heart shines as self, I am fully known and recognized without a shadow of doubt. When thinking acts as me, even if it is believed, it contains an element of doubt or uncertainty. Do not act based on the thoughts or emotions of an imposter self. Wait patiently for the inner confirmation of I, true I, heart I, and be that. Now, of course, I am not one that we would call awakened, but there is a place within myself that I also call the heart. I call it the heart. But of course, it's not at all the human heart, as you know. It's not even desires. It's none of that, of the things that are associated with the word heart. But when I take the time to be there, I feel I know myself. And when I'm there and I know myself from there, then I also know just as fully that all of the other times that I think I know who I am, that's not who I am. It's kind of like the journal entry we read earlier tonight, that if you are in the first position, then you know that the mind or the second position is just an invention. Right? So when I am there, I know who I am. When I'm in the mind, I think I know who I am. It's not as certain, which means, although I wouldn't necessarily say there's a conscious element of doubt, like I might be telling Danielle, oh yeah, I know, I like this, this, this. There's not a conscious element of doubt. But there also is not that certainty that there is from that still place within. And I came to see this clearly in the contemplation of this quote. And I came to see that when I'm walking around thinking I'm Regina and acting like Regina, what I'm really doing is living with an undercurrent of doubt, of uncertainty. And that is best experienced as not being that deep certainty that I experience from within the stillness. So I'll read this quote quickly again, and then it's time to end. I know the difference between what I am and what I am not. When all thinking is released and the heart shines as self, I am fully known and recognized without a shadow of doubt. When thinking acts as me, even if it is believed, it contains an element of doubt or uncertainty. Do not act based on the thoughts or emotions of an imposter self. Wait patiently for the inner confirmation of I, true I, heart I, and be that. Okay, that's all the time I have tonight. We will start with number 53 tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Same place. All right. Thank you, everyone. Good night.